now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Hauck.
Hey, hey, everybody. Good evening, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to another broadcast of Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to help you reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, including finding the courage to reclaim who you have always been and who you are. Very happy to be with you here this evening and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and everywhere in between. So before we get started tonight, everybody out there, welcome to December. Can you believe it? Here we are in December. Wow, unbelievable. I remember back in May, you know, talking to people, and I just said, you watch, you know, we're going to blink, and the next thing you know, we're going to be singing Christmas carols, or it's going to be December or something, and here we are. So again, welcome to December, this December 3rd. So, well, if you have been following me for some time, you know that each and every one of these broadcasts always have been focusing on the integration of spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationship with ourselves, relationship that we have with others, and certainly our relationship with God or the divine. I am Dr. James Hauck, and if you'd like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit that website. It is www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. Or there's another website that you might want to check out. It's www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. So either one, I'll be able to get your comments. Now, if you would like to call in and be part of the show this evening, or call in with any other insights or questions or general conversation on tonight's topic, I invite you to do that. And that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And as always, I will be taking your calls after the break. And tonight's topic is TV tray conversations. What changes when we begin to live as souls? Now, just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, that's okay. This broadcast will be posted on the BBS Radio website so that you can go back and you can listen again, or you can even go back into the archive section and listen to previous shows. And these podcasts are also available for straight download on iTunes, Audible, Spotify, and Amazon Music, as well as this show also replays on WNEW 102.7 FM HD3 out of New York on the weekends. Well, for those who might be tuning in for the first time, and I'm always appreciative of first-time listeners, you know, drop me a line and just say, hey, I caught your show. You know, I'm a first-time listener. I'd like to give you a shout-out sometime or just simple chat. So, again, you know, for those who have been following me for some time, you know that I am a firm believer that we all come into this world with everything we already need in terms of our gifts, our graces, our strengths, our personality, everything, you know, everything that gives us that understanding, you know, and what brings us peace in our lives. You know, just definitely two deep-seated beliefs that have really helped shape my outlook on, you know, set my foot on a path, let's just say, of reclaiming my authentic self as a soul. And this is, in fact, the same philosophy as what I share with clients regarding how and why I work with them the way that I do. Because I certainly believe that people have the answers within themselves, because you know, quite frankly, you know the kind of life you want to live. You know how you feel. You know what brings you peace and joy and hope, and you know what doesn't. And sometimes we are just simply going through life, minding our own business, and we're in the wrong place at the wrong time, and then something traumatic happens to us. Or we thought that we've dealt with an experience from our past, only to discover later on that those unresolved issues keep popping up again and again, or we become frustrated because we keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again. And now we have to go back and go deeper in our healing. Well, I'm a fan of Ralph Waldo Emerson. He's a famous poet and a writer, and he once wrote that what lies behind us and what lies before us, these are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. I'll say that again. What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. Now, as I said, that was the first belief. The second belief is that I, you know, again, very, very strong believer that we come into this world with some pretty awesome things, you know, our gifts, our graces, our talents, and so forth. And, you know, we often hear the message from society of like, don't look within. You know, look outside, you know, go find your peace somewhere other than looking inward. And that's just not true. That's not true, because we come into the world with some very, very beautiful things. And even though we may have had some awful and traumatic experiences, we may tend to stop believing that we are full of value, dignity, and worth, as well as hiding our giftedness so that others will not exploit these. Okay. Well, either way, we end up going through life thinking from, speaking from, and living from a place of woundedness instead of from a place of healing and grace and love and peace and wholeness. After all, we are already these things. We just don't fully realize who we truly are yet. And the reason for this is that all of our experiences, whatever they are taken in through our five senses, you know, sight, sound, taste, touch, smell. But these are limited, you know, or empirical evidence, let's say, that we can measure. But, you know, as I said, they're limited because they're interpreted in our mind based on previous experiences. And as a result, you know, we grow up and can we convince ourselves that, well, you know, this has to be true. My experience is true because I see it. Or if I can hear it, well, then that must be true. And if I can touch something, if I can hold it in my hands, well, then that must be true, as well as other sensory-related experiences or empirical evidence, let's just say, that we believe to be the end-all, be-all truth. However, as I said, these sensory perceptions are limited because whatever is taken in through the brain, the mind comes in and interprets what we have seen, heard, tasted, and touched, and smelled, based on our limited experiences, not realizing that the holiest and the most transformative experiences are the ones that touch the soul. So don't get trapped in the illusion that you have to go in search of something that you already have. I mean, that's the whole premise behind The Wizard of Oz. Okay, you know, Dorothy and her friends go off to see the wizard because, well, Dorothy wanted to go home. The Tin Man wanted a heart. Scarecrow wanted a brain. The Cowardly Lion wanted courage. Everybody wants something. And they thought, oh, okay, we'll go see this wise man, the wizard, and he will give it to me. And, you know, as the story goes, if you've watched it probably a million times, that in the end, the wizard just says, you know, I can't really give you, you know, a heart or a brain or courage, or even the ability to go home, because you had those things all along. You just didn't realize it. And so, I mean, that's just a timeless, classic, and deep, deep truth that we all need to realize, that we have everything we need. We do not lack anything. So where do we look for those things? Okay. As another favorite author of mine, T.S. Eliot, wrote that we shall not cease from exploration. And at the end of all of our exploring, we'll be arrive at the place where we started, and we will know it for the very first time. Again, don't go off searching for something you already have. Discover who you are and be that soulful presence in the world. Because the full realization of who we are as souls liberates us. It does set us free. You know, even as Jesus, you know, told his disciples, even as we read in the Gospels, that the truth sets us free. Because he was pointing to a higher truth that we're all souls connected to God ever since the beginning. And we're not exclusively the body, but also, you know, embracing the fullness and the ability to live as souls in this world. We have that capacity. It's this realization. What is clouding our vision? What is making it very difficult to not only see ourselves as a soul and that connectedness to God, but to see other people as a soul and their connectedness to God? One of my favorite passages in the Bible, actually the narrative, when God was calling Jeremiah to be a prophet. You know, Jeremiah's just there minding his own business, and God shows up. And God says, Jeremiah, I got to talk to you about something. And, you know, calls him to be a prophet. And Jeremiah's like, well, you know, but, you know, I can't, you know, stumbling over his excuses as if God didn't think it through. And, you know, I love what he told Jeremiah. You know, and God said, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. But I love that part, that before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. I mean, what did that look like? What did that sound like? What did that feel like? We don't know. But we understand that God knew us before we took on this body. Okay, so what did that soul look like? What was that connectedness that we've always had from the beginning? You know, and it's very hard for us to grasp the reality that we existed prior to taking on a physical body. You know, a body that gives form to a formless soul. In fact, you know, one of the trappings in the life is that we often limit ourselves to settling for the form. That is, you know, going back to the empirical evidences that we can measure through the form. You know, how much does something weigh? You know, what color is it? Is it hard? Is it soft? And so on and so forth. What does it sound like? Those are all externals. The soul doesn't have that kind of language. And as a result, we often give up exploring higher truths because how can you measure the soul with a bathroom scale or a radar device or even a tape measure? You know, but the soul is boundless, it's eternal, it's vast, and therefore its truths are experienced from life to life, soul to soul. I once shared in the last broadcast a quote from my teacher, Swami Paramanand, from the Akhand Paradham Ashram in Hardwar, India. Now, he once said that this ocean of worldly existence that is experienced through our five senses gets crossed easily having climbed the highest mountains and the deepest waters and even going through the fire. There is nothing but pure consciousness, so come up the mountain. However, the problem is that you don't leave your old ways of thinking and seeing behind. And that's a very good point. Again, what we see, what we hear, what we feel, what we smell, and so forth, limited. It's not the end-all, be-all truth. The soul is. Consciousness is. And we already have that connection. It's just a matter of time of when am I going to realize this? What's keeping me from seeing this? What's keeping me from really experiencing the fullness of God as a soul? And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. You know, it actually can be summed up in one of my favorite words, namaste, which roughly translated means, because I see myself as a soul of light. This allows me to greet the lighted soul of who you are, even if you don't see it in yourself. It's how I see you. And my prayer, you know, tonight is that I hope that you understand it. You come to that understanding. You come to see yourself as that beautiful, beautiful soul. So before we get underway tonight, I just wanted to reach out and give a shout out to my son, wish him an early happy birthday. His birthday is on the 6th, this Saturday. He's such a fine young man, wonderful family and so forth. And it's been a joy to watch him grow and develop into the person who he is. And I will say this, that his little daughter, my little granddaughter, already has him wrapped around her finger. So I just sit back and I just chuckle, you know, but it's he's just a very, very fine, fine man. Well, I trust that everybody had a nice Thanksgiving, you know, that all was well, good conversations, and hopefully the police weren't called to your house. Okay, that's always a good sign. Like, yeah, we had a pretty good Thanksgiving this year. We didn't see the cops. So, hey, I'll take it, you know, but at any rate, I wonder, you know, have you ever noticed how many times you eat dinner or your lunch or even breakfast in front of the TV? I mean, picture it, no pun intended. Okay. You have your food there and your space all reserved with your little TV tray, and you sit down, let's say, with others to enjoy your Thanksgiving meal. Okay. Or another meal. And have you ever noticed that nobody talks to nobody when you have a meal on your TV tray? There is no conversation. If there is, it's just like one or two things, or like, wow, wasn't that a great play on football? You know, and it's not surprising. You know, well, the reason why I'm bringing up the subject of TV tray conversations is that, have you noticed how your conversations have changed from year to year? Okay, and this is what I mean. Okay. Do you sit in silence with one another? When the family gets together, do you talk about the same old stuff, or do you tell and retell and retell the same old family stories year after year after year? I'm sure you have, because I've heard stories. Oh gosh, I could quote my family stories when I was age 9. I just heard them so often. Well, I wonder if you started to have conversations from the depths of your soul. Yeah, you know, from the depths of your soul, would the conversations sound any different? And I wonder also, what would your conversations sound like if you allowed your soul to speak in silence? You know, the truth is imparted person to person, heart to heart, soul to soul. Well, I imagine the TV tray moments would be rather interesting, just to say the least. Well, you know this as well as I do. You know, throughout this time of the year, despite the excitement and hustle and bustle and the craziness of the holiday season, many people struggle to find beauty and joy. I mean, they really do. You know, it's like, I know I'm supposed to be happy and everything. I just don't know why. And that's how, you know, the Charlie Brown Christmas, you know, movie, I guess you'd call it, starts off. You know, Charlie Brown's just sitting there, well, actually just leaning on, you know, a snow-covered wall with Linus, and he goes, I don't know what's wrong with me. I know I'm supposed to be happy this time of the year. I love getting presents and everything, but I just can't find the joy. And, you know, that's just spot on for many people, you know. And it's many people, let's just say, resort to focusing on the external sights and sounds of the season to be able to lift them out of their depression, or maybe to quiet their anxieties. However, there is tremendous joy to be found during this time of the year, indeed. But I want you to first look within and ask to be shown your real beauty as a soul. Ask, you know, what does my real beauty of a soul sound like? And to know your real beauty as a soul, that will definitely fill you with joy and bliss. As my teacher is also fond of saying, he writes, you know, beauty is most often spoken with reference to worldly relationships and objects. But he says, do not use this word beauty with regard to the physical features of a man or a woman or an expensive object that promotes your status in society. Because how beauty is perceived is a reflection of the mind's inner purity and goodness. However, as long as the soul is bound within nature's laws of cause and effect, the deepest essence of beauty, that is the soul, cannot be directly experienced. So in other words, what is crowding out your full awareness, your full experience as yourself, as a soul? What's getting in the way of that? Well, you know, this time of the year, I talk with many, many people, and they always find it difficult, if not downright, they become very resistant when it comes to truly discovering who they are as a soul. You know, some people are ready for it. Some people don't even know where to begin. Some people don't even know the right questions to ask, or, you know, how do you do this? You know, it's as if they discover, you know, who I am as being too high a cost to pay in terms of what they have to let go of in order to discover who they are. But when you think about it, in the end, when the body is in its transition, you know, in other words, it's dying, you have to let go of everything that we thought that we've accumulated in this life. We have to let go of our degrees. We have to let go of our homes. We have to let go of our families. We have to let go of our savings accounts. We have to let go of our 401ks. And we, you know, we even have to let go of, you know, right down to those family secrets that were once promised to be taken to the grave. Everything. So whatever we know, we identify with, you know, we identify with that and thus limit our understanding of who we truly are. Well, in a previous broadcast, I talked about listening to your soul in silence. Okay, you know, drowning out all the distractions, all the to-do lists, and other thoughts that are just added to the monkey mind. You know, the mind is just jumping around all over the place. You know, to really sit in stillness and allow your soul's voice to speak. And many people are very good at this. Many people get started and they can only sit in silence for maybe 5 minutes. And then they work up to 10 minutes, and then 15 minutes, and then a half hour, and so on and so forth. But start small. Get comfortable with sitting with yourself in silence, in that stillness. And whatever comes up in your heart, in your soul, don't judge it. Just observe it. Well, this week, in this broadcast, I'm talking more about living from your soul. And more importantly, what changes when you understand yourself as a vast soul and begin to live as your soul. You see, embracing this reality really changes things up for us. So what exactly does change? Everything. When we start living from our soul, we start living as a soul, relationships change, how we interact with one another changes because, hey, we're not going to see one another based on externals. And also, we're not going to focus on problems, you know, but rather we focus on how we can nurture one another as souls. Yes, are there going to be problems? Yeah, but you're not going to sweat over it. You know, you're not going to be reduced to tears over it. It's like, okay, what has to be done? Or how can I help another person? Or how can I ask for help? How can I reach out, you know, and vice versa. Well, you know, speaking of the externals, you know, quite often down throughout history, the history of humanity, you know, people have been defined as important, or this group over here is unimportant. Well, that group over there is essential, or this group here is inessential. But, you know, all those labels are based on externals. That a person's worth was determined based solely upon the exterior. You know, their looks, their hairstyles, their skin color, their bloodlines. And in fact, throughout history, there's always been, if you've noticed, there's always been a set of standards for the rich and the powerful And then we have this other standard over here for the poor and the vulnerable. And there, I really believe that a time is upon us when these man-made boundaries and limitations and standards are being shaken to their very core, because more and more people are becoming aware of themselves as a soul. And here's the best part, they are hungering to live from their soul. And what is transforming is that generations now, as and even the ones who have yet to be born, are learning to see people for who they are, not from the limited externals of skin color or gender or age or culture or socioeconomic status, but to see one another as souls. Because all those externals, those things don't apply when you understand people as a soul. You begin to treat one another differently. You begin to treat yourself differently, and so forth. But despite the fact that, we look at the nation or the world and what's going on, and today, we may say, well, we have a long way to go. There have been many movements of helping inner generations reclaim who they are and empowering them to embrace themselves as eternal souls. Well, last year, I don't know if it was around this time or not, but last year I came across a story about evidence that points to a mass grave that was discovered back, I think it was in May of 2021, but I just came across the story last year. It was a story of the Kamloops Industrial School in Kamloops, British Columbia, Canada. And if you've been following me for some years, you know that this is not the first time I've talked about such atrocities that have occurred within residential schools in Canada and the Native American boarding schools here in the United States. And the mass graves that I've also visited, I found in Tuam, County Galway in Ireland, and the Magdalene Laundries, and countless others. I've kind of trekked the better part of the world, and I want to see for myself what's going on with these stories, what's going on with the people, how do people put their lives back together when history is just being uncovered with the atrocities and the atrociousness of how can humanity wound humanity in this way? Well, if you're unfamiliar with these that I mentioned or other intergenerational traumas, I certainly invite you to order my book. And this is not a shameless promotion here. It's just, in all seriousness, it's the book When Ancestors Weep, Healing the Soul from Intergenerational Trauma. And you can get that Amazon, Barnes and Noble, other bookstores. Okay. Well, there was at Kamloops, there was this mass grave that was uncovered and suspected somewhere around 215 unmarked graves. Okay. And, definitely this begins a journey for the First Nation to bring their missing children home. And there was an old apple orchard where evidence of the graves was found by ground penetrating radar, years ago, that could soon be the site of an archaeological dig and work to exhume remains. Okay, so that would be interesting. So, Kamloops Industrial School, Kamloops, British Columbia, Canada. Okay, well, for many adult survivors of traumatic events, certainly, avoiding thinking and or talking about such topics is common because people feel overwhelmed. Some people don't want to feel that pain all over again. They grieve very heavily for their ancestors, and even the people who are caught in that intergenerational trauma today. And some people may resort to alcohol or other substances as a way to numb their feelings and thoughts related to the trauma. And some people may resort to different forms of self-harm, such as burning or cutting, that actually release endorphins to either numb their feelings or create a sense of feeling alive. Well, all in all, a distinct complexity and intergenerational trauma and these stories was really emerging in the field of traumatic studies, which included a person's loss of a clear sense of who they are. I mean, you talk about who am I? a person just has no idea based on what has come before them. If the trauma is just so intense, such as uncovering a mass grave and so forth. And it also includes how a traumatic loss contributes to a sense of feeling disconnected from your relationships, or resulting, in a loss of your core beliefs about who you are. And when we lose a sense of who we are perhaps more willing to seek out a sense of self-worth from others, allowing them to define us according to their definitions and their expectations, instead of, this is who I am. I have brought into this world many, many good things. But, by expanding this definition of PTSD, today's healthcare and mental health and pastoral professionals are now, thankfully, better able to understand how a prolonged exposure to trauma affects the psychological well-being of people in their everyday lives. And I also assert that much of the intergenerational trauma can often be traced back to prolonged exposure to traumatic events, that a person just feels trapped day in and day out, especially with the emphasis on the loss of a sense of self, which is so prominent in surviving generations. Well, I would really love to hear what's in your heart about this subject and about TV tray conversations and living from your soul. So again, if you want to call in, that number is 888-627-6008, 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls right now. So, or after this break, I should say. So again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Hout. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, early in the show, I was talking about, the latter part of the first part of the story, or of the show, I was talking about a story I came across about evidence that points to a mass grave that was discovered back in May 2021, at the Kamloops Industrial School in Kamloops, British Columbia, Canada. And it was at the old apple orchard behind the school where evidence of the graves was found by ground-penetrating radar last May, or two, three, 4 years ago, that could soon be the site of an archaeological dig and work to exhume remains. And that's coming straight from the chief, Roseanne Casimir. And as a result of this and many other boarding school graves, mistreatment, and contempt for Indigenous people, many survivors and future generations struggle with complex PTSD. Complex PTSD has pretty much just been described as the symptoms of very long-term trauma that were sustained during prolonged traumatic experiences, where people have been typically held in a state of captivity, physically or emotionally or both. And in these situations, people feel under the control of, let's just say, the offender, and believe that they will never be able to escape from danger. And such examples of complex trauma The situations include being held captive in concentration camps or prisoner of war camps, or prostitution rings, child exploitation rings, prolonged domestical violence, and prolonged physical, emotional, and sexual abuse in children. Now, to the above examples of complex PTSD, I also want to include exposure to residential, boarding school living and the conditions that, these kids, these people lived under. And it's defined as residential school syndrome. And this came from the authors of Robertson and Shiverin back in 2015. Now, the residential school syndrome characterizes thousands of indigenous adult victims and survivors who attend government-established and religious-based residential schools as kids. They didn't have a choice. It's like, you will go here. We will turn you into, lack of a better word here, folks, turn you into a white person. We want you to get rid of your language. We're going to have you cut your hair. We're going to have you dress in, regular clothes and so on and so forth. Just a total disregard for their identity. And although many survivors, report symptoms that are similar to complex PTSD, such as depression, anxiety, addiction, suicidal inclinations, rage, and mental illness, the cause of their trauma is unique because of the stripping away of one's identity. And that's crucial to understand here. When you don't know who you are, when you don't realize, I'm a soul. God knew me before I took on this body, before I took on this shape, even though it's hard for us to understand what that looks like, and just trust that connectedness. It's just a stripping away of one's identity. And what are some ways in which these treatments, let's say, of residential school, the residential school syndrome, excuse me, are still being carried out today regarding how people are viewed today? Is there still prejudice? Yes, there is. Are there still things in place that favor the rich? Yes, there are. Do people who are struggling with residential school syndrome struggle to get their fair share? Absolutely. And so on and so forth. And so there's a lot of mistrust out there, as well as just emotionally wounded people. Now, ironically, and I'm going to turn this around to something very powerful here, folks. Ironically, this phenomenon has been, like the one aspect that history has always underestimated about the voice of the human soul. Okay, follow me here. Example. Humanity has always attempted to silence people or silence societies or silence the nations through orchestrated killings, murders, genocide, starvation, forced assimilations, humiliations, degradations, often defining people as savages or primitive, or that group over there is backward and unworthy. And because they're unworthy, they're unlovable, and therefore they are disposable. Nevertheless, this phenomenon is not true for everybody. For the majority of people who experience this kind of trauma, they can emotionally, physically, and psychologically process their pain, find their soul's voice, and heal from the past. And yet, even when traumatic events result in physical deaths, the soul still can be heard. And this is because, when you come right down to it, we're energy in the purest sense. And therefore our souls have a very distinct voice all on their own. And not even the death of the body can silence the soul. Because if there's one prominent lesson that comes to us from the field of physics, besides gravity and inertia, is that energy can never be destroyed. It can only be transformed. And therein lies humanity's healing. How are you going to kill the soul? You can't. You can kill the body. The soul lives on. So how does all of this relate to living from your soul? Well, it all begins with understanding who we are not. And you've heard me share this story many times on this broadcast. And it's one of my favorite stories. It's the story of the washerman. And this really drives home the point of understanding, you know, who we are not. So once upon a time, there was a man who lived hundreds of years ago. I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And being just a very simple man who lived a simple life, his occupation was that of being a washerman. You know, one who goes around a town and collects people's dirty laundries and loads it on his donkey. And then he takes the laundry down to the river and he washes the laundry. And then he lays the laundry out on large rocks to dry. And then he folds the laundry and returns it to his customers at the end of the day. And that's how he gets paid. You know, not bad. You know, he does it day in and day out. Well, one day, when he was collecting the laundry and taking it down to the river to wash, he realized that he forgot to bring the rope to tie his donkey to the tree so that it wouldn't run off while he was down in the river washing the laundry. And he was so beside himself because he would lose a whole day's wage if he had to go back home and get his rope. And he just didn't know what to do. Like I said, he was just beside himself and, you know, just people started to take notice of this. And as he was standing there, not knowing what to do, a wise old man just calmly was walking by and he just asked him, you know, are you okay? And the washerman explained the situation to this man about forgetting his rope so he couldn't tie up his donkey, so on and so forth. And this wise old man smiled. And he said, sir, no need to worry. I have an idea. Why don't you just pretend to tie the donkey to this tree? What do you mean, just pretend? Yeah, that's what I said. Just pretend to go through the motions of tying your donkey to the tree. Only make sure that he sees you do this. Well, as ridiculous as it sounded, the washerman did just that. He got the donkey's attention and he pretended to tie his donkey to the tree and making sure that the donkey was watching him all along. And then he took his laundry down to the river and he began to wash it. And every now and then, the washerman would look back over his shoulder at the tree just to see what the donkey was doing. Now, the donkey was still there, eating grass and acting as if it was really tied to the tree. And it was perfectly content. And when the washerman finished with his laundry for the day, he loaded up his donkey, and now he commanded the donkey to move. But the donkey didn't move. It acted as if it had been tied to the tree all along. And now the washerman thought he was really in a bind because he couldn't get his donkey to move. So he runs and he finds the wise old man who told him to pretend tying the donkey to the tree in the first place. And he found this man. He explained the situation and how the donkey refused to move because it still thinks it's tied to the tree and so on and so forth. And the wise old man replied to the washerman, no problem. Here's an easy solution. Just as you pretended to tie the donkey to the tree, now you need to pretend to untie your donkey from the tree. Only make sure the donkey watches you do this. So the washerman goes back to the donkey and starts to pretend that he's untying the donkey. And he made sure that the donkey was watching him. And then with a stern voice, he commanded the donkey to move. And he and the donkey started to walk back home. Now, on the surface, we might think to ourselves that this donkey in the story was just plain stupid. You know, being tricked into thinking it was tied when actually it was not. Because when you think about it, all the washerman did was simply go through the motions of tying and untying his donkey, which actually worked. Now, my friends in India often have used this story to demonstrate how, like that donkey, humanity thinks it's in servitude or bondage. In other words, humanity does not know that they're not the body or the mind or the intellect. Because we're independent. There are no restrictions on you, no bondages. And so even when the body dies, we will not die. You know, and the Vedanta scriptures and other sacred writings tells humanity that the body and the soul are not one. They are different. But we're so limited in our understanding that we're bound by what we see and fear and feel and hear and taste and touch, that we think that that's all there is. So we, like the donkey, end up believing the illusion that we are limited or we're restricted simply because we're told by another that we are. Unfortunately, we take that on as our identity. And we act accordingly, believing that this is as good as it's going to get. And I see this quite a bit in counseling people who identify themselves with their problems or their illnesses, because simply they're not aware of being more than what they have become so far in this life. So they often accept this distorted template that has been laid over the top of their lives. And as a result, people tend to beat themselves up for making the same mistakes over and over again and again in the choices and in the relationships in life. Yet in this story, the donkey that is free all the time think that it's tied. And similarly, on a metaphysical level, we who are souls believe that we are tied to the body. That our soul is captive somehow, and it seems to be the concrete truth. You know, and at a physical level, we're bound to an endless desire to acquire things. You know, again, based on the externals. We want beauty. We want spiritual experiences. We want knowledge. We want wealth. We want fame. We want success. So on and so on and so forth. As well as we want to enjoy all of these things, as well as the avoidance of the negative things in our lives. Such as we want to avoid bad relationships or financial problems and so forth. And as a result, we believe that we have to find a key to get us out of our prison. But you know, that key, so to speak, could actually turn into, well, I need more money. I need stronger passion. I need to find my true love or any other desire that's out there. But what if we are already free? What if we're already free? What if there is no rope? What if there is no tree? What if the illusion of being in prison is an illusion? Now, I don't want to come across as one who's going to minimize another person's pain or problems or struggles, but just consider this. How might we be empowered if we truly understand ourselves as solutions to our problems? And we just do it simply by removing the layers of conditioning that society has put on us, or let's say the imaginary ropes that keep us tied to our problems. But another way to looking at it is, you know, what keeps us bound in toxic relationships? What keeps us thinking that there's nothing more to us because we've been told this about ourselves all of our lives? And here's the irony. When we are truly able to see ourselves as souls, and ultimately when we are able to realize ourselves as souls and we begin to see other people as souls, we are no longer willing to accept relating to people as anything less than them also being souls. I mean, how many people, I mean, just this year, let's go back over this year. How many times have we heard and seen people calling for an end to violence, crime, and poverty? I mean, humanity has always struggled with these issues, but has never looked for the answers in the right places. Because all too often, this focus has been on the externals that have often caused such division in humanity in the first place. And all these externals, you know, have produced, you know, what some people refer to as isms, ISMS, isms in the world today. I mean, we have sexism, racism, ageism, classism, egoism, and so on and so forth. But when we focus on the soul of the person, all of these isms fall away. They simply cannot follow the language of the soul. because the soul is always found by looking inward. And when we do that, there's no more sexism. There's no more racism. There's no more ageism. There is no more egoism. You know, isms simply do not have a voice in matters of the soul. For we all are beautiful souls made in the image of God, full of inherent value, dignity, and worth. If there's only one thing that you're going to take away from this podcast this evening, it's that. We are all beautiful souls made in the image of God, full of inherent value, dignity, and worth. Do not accept another person's definition of who they think you need to be so that they are comfortable with it. Find your value. Find your dignity. Find your worth. It's already there in you. Never give up that search. It is there. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and just want to say thank you for spending this hour with me. I really appreciate it. And drop me a line of the websites that I had quoted at the beginning. And just invite you to join me in 2 weeks as we're going to continue these discussions of integrating our spirituality and our mental health. So in the meantime, everybody, be safe out there and behave yourselves. And we will talk in 2 weeks. Take care. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.